Tonight is going to, as far as class is concerned, rely heavily on your class participation. So that we're straying from lecture and really diving into class participation. So when we open it up for a discussion, hopefully the crickets aren't louder than you guys. So we'll see how that goes. But we've been talking about making things right when things go wrong. We've talked about the importance of attitude when things are wrong, in the midst of things going wrong, the importance of the right attitude. We talked specifically about David. We talk about David there on the battle lines. The other men were afraid. David saw it as opportunity to glorify God and knew that God would be with him. And it's very much the attitude made the difference in that scenario. And so, and very similarly, when we're going through different situations, it can be an opportunity for us to glorify God, even in the midst of very diverse and struggling situations for us. We saw that Paul, as an example, in the list of all the things he went through, was able to glorify God even in those circumstances. So attitude makes the difference. We also talked about the difference that conviction can make. When I think of conviction, I think of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego when they're standing in front of the king of the known world at that time, and they're not bowing down to the idol that is made of all the various parts of various elements, not the golden idol. That's another dream. Sorry, getting my stories mixed up. But the golden idol, and they don't bow down to it. And they even go as far as to say, "We are not careful to answer you in this matter, O king. Our God is able to save us. But even if he's not, right? Even if he's not, we will not bow down. So that's conviction. That's not only is that faith in God, but it's saying conviction in that it doesn't matter. Even if God does not save us from that, from this, these circumstances, we're still not going to bow, we're still not going to change, we're still not going to bend or break under these circumstances. And so the difference that conviction can make. And I want to say also about this class in general, these are not like sequential, I've got to have the right attitude, these are not made to be steps, these are not made to be sequential in their usefulness. I'd rather it be this analogy or concept that, you know, going through life is like going down a path. How many of you have gone hiking or like hiking or enjoy hiking? Some of you are like, no, I do not like that. But imagine you like hiking. Let's pretend for a moment that you like hiking. And we're hiking down, and you can imagine like a postcard trail, right? And you're hiking down this trail, wherever it is in the world, whatever the circumstances, the nature, the beautiful things. Snow White's with you and all the animals are there too. Whatever you want to imagine in this hike that you're going down. And then you turn the corner. Weather changes, the circumstances change. Now there's a cliff, and you've got to negotiate that, and it's starting to rain. And all of a sudden, you're like, "Yeah, I don't know," but you've prepared. You have the right gear to put on. You can change the shoes to put on. You've prepared. You're ready for these circumstances. Let's pretend that is kind of what this class is, in that we are going to try and prepare ourselves as much as possible. We don't know the curveballs that are around every bend. We don't know what's coming tomorrow. But let's say that this class, or things like this, opportunities like this, prepare us for whatever those circumstances are going to be. I'm filling my bucket up. I'm putting things in my backpack. This is not Dora the Explorer. Please don't go down that path. But I'm getting myself ready for whatever circumstances are going to come. And so tonight is not meant to be sequential, but it is meant to just be another tool that we can use in helping us be ready for whatever things are coming down the path. Now, when we talk about these things, making things right when things go wrong, we need to make sure we're checking our goals. Do we have the right goals? Are we setting some things out there so we're working towards something? We're going to talk about how this works in the light of circumstances, but this is more of a preventative kind of thing. If we checked and looked at self-evaluation, which is something we all like to do on a regular basis, it's great, right? We sit down, we buy the magazines and all those little, you know, question those articles, answer all these questions to find out if you're this or whatever. We love self-evaluation. So much fun. But if we actually sat down and thought about what it is, there's some questions we can ask about what am I living for? This is not meant to be like this existential question, what is the meaning of life kind of thing. This is more of like, what am I living? What gets me up in the morning? What's keeping me motivated? What's making me go forward? That's kind of a big overarching kind of thing. What am I working towards? Maybe this kind of is something that we can break down into smaller things, and these are for you in your mind to be answering. What am I working towards? And what are some things I'm wanting to achieve? And this breaks it down even smaller. What am I trying to achieve? And we don't necessarily, I don't wake up every morning thinking about what are my goals? Am I making it through my goals in life? I don't think many of us do that. I think most of us are like, what do I have to do today, right? What is on my docket for today? And Lord, that is enough. And in a lot of ways, that is the right attitude. But if we broke everything down and talked about goals, we're talking about goals that can help us through situations or putting things in place so that when those situations occur, I am prepared as much as possible. But in thinking about goals in general, what are some things that people make goals for? What are some typical goals people have? What's that? Retirement? Retirement is one. Education. Careers. Goal-oriented as far as career is concerned. Financial things. Health is another one, right? Coming up on that time of year, we're about to make some resolutions, right? What's that? Family. You guys are doing really good. All right, here's the ones that I just put up here. Just here, like general ideas, and when we talk about goals, right? So health, wealth, family, our job, management. I'm going to manage the resources I have better. I'm going to do this better. And we use those words, right? There can be spiritual goals. I'm going to do these certain things more. We use words like more or better, which aren't necessarily actionable. But we use those words. And then when do goals start? Do goals start when? New Year's, right? After, I've got all these, you know, holiday parties to get through, Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that, and then I'll start my, you know, whatever it is, program. Then I'm going to do keto or whatever the weird ones are now. I'll start that. And if it's not during, if it's in the middle of the year, when do diets start? Tomorrow or Monday, right? Whatever we feel in the right moment, right? Tomorrow or Monday. And then sometimes we think, well, maybe someday I'll do this, right? Someday. And these are things, these are obviously, you know, these aren't necessarily always said with great conviction, some of these things, but these are typical ways that we think about goals, and not all, some of us actually put down and put into place our goals. But when we think about goals, goals are as good as what? What keeps, it's good to have a goal, but what else do you need? I need to have steps. Like, I need to have a process, right? I need to have a system to get towards that goal. I have a goal out there. I want to do item X, or I want to achieve this thing that's out there. And that's great. It's good to have a goal. But it's only as good as your system is to get there. And so we're going to look at a few things tonight, especially in light of checking our goals in light of kind of how we live in life. At some point, we have to decide what is the most important, what is the goal in life, right? Especially in light of our physical limitations. David said, Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Why does that seem strange to be coming from David? Did David act like he was frail? No. No, he acted like, you know, it doesn't matter who he's going against, right? It didn't really matter. But here's David, help me to know how frail I am. I think there is a possibility that we can get into a situation where we don't really think about, all right, tomorrow might not come, right? We don't think about those kind of things. We're going through the day, we're going through a month, we're going through a year, and we don't really consider the frailty of our own life. And that kind of skews our image. It skews kind of maybe what our priorities might be in that moment. But we wouldn't think about David saying that, but David prays that prayer. James says it this way, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow, for what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and vanishes away. And so in the mindset or in the concept that this is a life that we live. It's a fleeting life. It is not meant to endure forever. So with the time that we are given, what are our goals? What are we trying to achieve? What is the most important thing? And that, having that goal, knowing what that most important thing is, and then putting the steps in place to work towards that, helps us to get through some of these things. We're going to look at what this is. This is not a new concept. in the history of man. Joshua said it this way in making your choice. What were the circumstances around Joshua's statement? What was happening here? Joshua tells them, you guys need to make a decision. Right, they're in the promised land. They've conquered most of it, right? And even now, Joshua's asking them, hey, you need to choose who you're going to serve. And I like the way he says it. You can choose to serve the gods of the people in whose land you now dwell, which is to say, you can serve the gods of the people you just conquered, which means they're not really that much of a god, right? Or you can serve the God of our Father. You can serve God, serve the Lord. Elijah asks this question, how long hesitate ye between two opinions? This is a great phrase to know, but they were hesitating between God and the Baals as whether or not they were going to serve him. Then Jesus says it this way, Matthew 6, no one can serve two masters, for he will either hate the one and love the other, he will be devoted to the one or despise the other. So it's not a new concept to really make sure that we keep things in perspective as far as where our goals are in life, and specifically in relationship to God and our spiritual life. So it's making sure that we keep those things in the proper perspective, in the proper focus, for when we go around that corner in the trail, we're ready for whatever it is that lies ahead of us. So we're going to, I'm going to ask you to take some notes here. You can make mental notes. Some of you are really good at making mental notes. You can do maybe on your computer or your phone, which is a computer, literally, your tablet, piece of paper, maybe the green card in front of you. Make some notes. And here's what we're going to make notes on, all right? We're about to read some passages from various writers. And what I want you to take note on are what are actionable items in consideration for my life as a Christian, in my life as working towards that ultimate goal. What are some actionable items that are mentioned in these scriptures that we're going to be looking at? What are some specific things mentioned that we should be working on? He may mention specific items, very specific things that we as individuals can be working on as our goal towards heaven. And are there any concepts mentioned that can help us understand the bigger picture? Why does understanding the bigger picture help in relationship to goal setting and in relationship to kind of how I view myself in that picture? Why does understanding the bigger picture help? Yes. Yeah, so understanding my part in the bigger picture helps motivate me towards, we've all heard the phrase that we're cogs in the machine, right? But if I understand what the machine is doing, I understand the overall purpose, and I approve of that overall purpose, then I might feel joyous or take pleasure in knowing that I'm a part of something much bigger. I'm doing my part, my individual part. There was, over in Ireland, the story was told of there were work parties that were organized. The government was organizing work for the peasants in order to give them a job that they can do something. And they were motivated. They were singing songs as they were laying brick and stone and making a road. They had a purpose. They were making a road. But when it was found out that the road was just out into the middle of nowhere, that the road tied into no other system, and that it was just a job to give them a job, the singing stopped. The joy was gone. Right? There was no overall, there was not my part in a larger picture. It was just the tediousness of doing this thing that would eventually mean really nothing. Right? But as far as us understanding our purpose in the bigger picture helps, and some of these writers mention some of these things. And then also, are there any processes mentioned? Are there certain action words or processes, specific things that are mentioned in these passages that can help us either achieve or work towards or understand better our overall goal? So we're going to go through these together, and then afterwards we'll see what your notes say. All right, we're trying this out and see what your notes say afterwards as far as these verses are concerned. So the first one's in 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6. Paul giving information here to Timothy amongst some of his last letters to be written. and he says to Timothy, but you, O man of God, flee these things. And if you look later or earlier in the passage, he's talking about things concerning money and the difficulties around that. But he says, you, O man of God, flee these things. Is that an action word? So in setting goals and making sure I'm achieving my goals, one of my action things to do whenever I come across an opportunity that is not necessarily in line with or in step with the goal that I have set, in that moment, I could just run. Who do we know that's famous for just fleeing the moment of temptation? Joseph, right? He fled, right? That works. And of course, it may not be that he is saying literally flee, but maybe it is literally you just need to run. But it is to avoid these things. Avoid these things, these unrighteous things that he's talking about before. But then he says flee, and then what's the opposite action word that he uses in this text? Pursue, chased after, right? Capture these things. And then he gives us some specific things. He says pursue after, chase after righteousness or right living. Pursue righteousness, godliness, godlikeness. Pursue or chase after faith. Pursue, chase after love, after patience, after gentleness. If I'm adding these things, as if every one of these things is seen as sort of a tool or a something to help me in my life, I'm chasing after righteousness. How does righteousness help me when it comes to or dealing with things that are going wrong in my life? How does righteousness help me? What's that? It's a grounding concept, right? It puts me in perspective, my life in perspective of an overall picture, and it helps me. Like if I have chosen to follow Christ, I have chosen to live according to His commandments, and a lot of decisions are made for me at that moment, aren't they? If I've decided to live under the umbrella, under the authority of God, then there's some decisions, there are things I don't do, and there are things that I do, because I'm living a life that's righteous, yes. Yes, helps us to refocus. As a teacher, have you had to refocus children at all? Never, right? And so understanding that, okay, here's a refocus, a reset, I need to get back on. Maybe I was erring in some areas, and I need to refocus. Godliness, or godlikeness, using God as our focus in that as well. Faith, we can talk about faith. We talked about that in connection with David and others who, because of faith, were able to endure, able to go through these things, and seeking love, with those love that helps us to overcome the circumstances of a situation, maybe where somebody has wronged us, or the things that are going wrong in my life, or because of somebody else, but the love that I have for God helps me to overcome those circumstances. And so all these things become a tool. Patience, I mean, who's got the time to talk about patience, really? So that's something that we could talk about as far as that as a resource for us in our everyday walk. And then, of course, gentleness, which I think as a society we're losing that altogether. But gentleness is something that needs to be defined in us. All right, so those things are mine. I add those to myself. I add those to my repertoire of tools and going through forward in life. And then he says what after this? So flee, pursue, then what's the next action concept? Fight. Where does Paul write about this concept of fighting the good fight of faith? In another passage in Ephesians, he talks about the armament in which we are to use in fighting that fight, right? And he goes into great detail, and we'll talk about more of that later on. But fighting the good fight of faith, laying hold of eternal life to which you were called. So these are very much like action. This is like Paul encouraging Timothy, put some chutzpah into your life. And grab, lay hold of eternal. Don't just kind of like, maybe. You know, this is laying hold of it. This is reaching out. And this is action on our part, reaching forward to these things. If you're busy doing something, do you have time to do anything else? How many of you are so busy that you don't have time to do much of anything else? Y'all been there? All right. If I'm busy, my life is busy about these things. And I'm fighting, I'm going, I'm moving forward. There's usually a little time for distraction. There's little times for things that might like take us off the path that we're supposed to be on. So here are some things that we need to make sure that we're doing, some action steps. Look over in 1 Peter. 1 Peter chapter 1. When the Bible says, gird up the loins of your mind, what are we talking about? What's the concept that you've heard? What's that? That's right. Get ready for action, right? I like to think of, I don't know why, I'm just weird this way, but you know before, I don't know if they still do this, but back in the late 1900s, when I was going to sports things, they would you know, so they'd play that song, like, let's get ready to rumble. Let's get ready. They do that. That's like, in my mind, when it's time to gird up and get ready to go, that's what I'm hearing in my mind. So this is what Peter is saying, right? This is what's going on. Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, rest your hope fully on the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. So get ready for action. Make yourself ready for action. This is that wrapping up the clothing you're wearing so you can work. Getting ready for work. And then be sober-minded. Are there things that could cloud our minds or cloud our judgments? Of course, there are substances, there are thought patterns, there are people in our lives, there are influences that could cloud our minds, cloud our judgments, make us think a wrong way about something. He's saying be sober-minded, be clear-minded about what's going on in the life around us. Be sober and rest your hope. And this is interesting. I think I see this grace. I see this this concept of end times as my hope is put right on what I've learned and what I understand about what Christ has promised me. My hope sits on those promises of God. And so with that being my focus, I'm ready to work. My hope is resting there in a very sure place. I move on. I move on as an obedient child. And I move on not conforming. And that's very difficult to not conform. At some level, we all conform. Well, Josh, how do you know that? Because we are human. At some level, we all conform. We conform in how we dress, right? We conform in maybe the vehicles, our houses are conformed to some standard. Whether right or wrong, it's conformed to some standard. And so at some point we conform, but there's a line that we have to draw, right? And that's where it gets difficult sometimes I need to draw this line. And I don't go beyond this line as far as me concerned. I'm in this world, I've got to operate in this world, and I conform to those social norms in that context. But beyond this line that God has set, I don't set that line. God has set that line as far as where I stop conforming. That's where I've got to stop. And we need to make sure we're doing that. Not conforming ourselves to, and he mentions two things that we should not be conforming to. The former what? Former lusts that were conceived because of our ignorance. There are many people who are operating in ignorance in relationship to spiritual matters. And here are the former things. We should not be living a life that is based on lust and ignorance, but living a life based on enlightenment as far as understanding of God's overall picture for us and self-control. So if these are things we shouldn't be doing, the opposite should be what we are working on. But enlightenment and self-control and to be holy. And we see this, but being holy in our conduct, that is being sanctified, that is continuing to operate under those parameters that we have been given. So we see these concepts here, girding up, getting ready for action, being sober and putting our hope in a safe place, not conforming, but being obedient. So here are some action words, some very specific things that we can be doing in our life in preparing for the circumstances that are going to be coming in our lives. We go back to 2 Timothy now. 2 Timothy, and he starts off in a really high note here. Suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. That is quite the invitation, right? I'll sign up for that. If we put that on a billboard out there, sign up for the suffer bus. Who wants to suffer? I don't think we have a lot of people signing up for that, right? I don't think so. Would you guys sign up for it? Just to see what kind of suffering is? Sure. I mean, yeah, maybe. You guys are weird that way. But other than that, most people would not sign up for the suffer bus. So when he says here, suffer hardship with me as a good soldier of Jesus Christ. He puts it in the concept. He puts it in a certain, construct as far as what the suffering is. It's not just suffering for whatever sake. And he says, no soldier in active service entangles himself in the affairs of everyday life. And this is where maybe that suffering comes. I'm trying to not entangle myself into the things that are going on in the world around me. And in doing so, and in not entangling or not conforming to those things, I suffer for it. Do you see that back and forth? And you guys have seen it. You've experienced it. I'm not going to conform to the social norms at the workplace that involve cheating or stealing in any way. I'm not going to conform to these things. Well, you're going to suffer for it because you're standing up on a line that people don't stand up on anymore. But I'm going to suffer for it. But you're suffering people who've done it before us as a good soldier. And so there may be many things that we, in trying to stay unentangled with the world around us, we suffer because of those, our efforts in that case. But he says, in doing so, we need to make sure that we are not entangling in the everyday affairs, that we get lost in the weeds of everyday affairs. There are so many distractions out there that would draw us away off the path. I don't know if you guys have ever watched any of the Tolkien movies or read the books or anything like that, but there is a certain moment where they're going through the Black Forest, right? Let's just say the Black Forest. I don't remember the specific name. Some of you can correct me later. But they're going through the forest, and they were told not to stray off the path. Don't get off the path. You'll lose your way, and then spiders, all right? Let's just leave it at that. Okay, so in life, that can be the case. Like, we're told to stay on this path. Don't stray off the path. You can lose your way and not find your way back to it. That's possible. And then spiders, right? If that's not enough, spiders. Some of you would burn your house down if you found a big enough spider in it. So in this case, we need to make sure we're keeping these things in perspective so that I don't entangle myself in the everyday affairs of this world, so that, what is his motivation here at the end of this verse? So that I can please God. That's going to help us keep our goals and things in perspective. If I know at the end of the day who I am trying to please, who do we normally, and who do they, let's just say the ominous they, who do they normally try to please? Selves, right? And there are those that try to please others because of maybe the way they're brought up or certain things that are going on in their lives. That they try and please others. But at the end of the day, it is most important that we live our life in order to please God. And that's going to help us make decisions. It's going to help us understand that, all right, I might be suffering right now in this moment, but I'm doing it in a way that it's pleasing to God. And that puts things in a very different light when we're going through them. So here are some specific action things that we can do when it comes to different events or things that we're going through in our lives. Where are we on time? So make sure we have... Okay, all right. Very quickly, 1 Corinthians chapter 9. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. I can do all things. When you see that I can do all things, what do you think of, first of all? Philippians 4:13? Great answer. All right. And so he talks about, he says this, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, and he uses that in the construct of service and bringing glory and honor to God. He said, I can do all things for the sake of the gospel so that I may become a fellow partaker of it. So I'm going to do all these things, not for my own sake, but for the sake of others, for the sake of the gospel, so that I can also become a partaker of the blessings of that gospel, of that good message. And that helps too. I'm going to go through this moment. I'm going to go through this right now. And it's going to hurt. And it's not going to be fun. But I'm going to go through it because on the other side of this, I will continue to be one who's a partaker of the gospel, of the good news. And he goes on to talk about those who run, those special people who like to run. And they all do it to win a prize, right? It's obvious that that's the case. And he says, run in such a way that you may win. And everyone who competes in the games exercises, here's a concept, self-control in all things. Is that difficult, self-control? To bring oneself into subjection? So exercising self-control, that when you, that they do it to win just a crown, a wreath, what a, you know, a participation trophy, whatever it is that they do it to win. But we win, or we fight, or we run in order to get something that's imperishable, that's much more exciting than a participation trophy. Therefore, run in such a way as not without aim. I have a goal. That's where I'm going. Box in such a way as not just beating the air, but I discipline my body. I bring myself into subjection. I make it my slave. And that's a huge concept. We could talk a lot about that, in that that some of the things that are going on in my life are because I've not brought my body, my physical body, under self-control. I'm allowing the physical side of my life to be in control, and I'm in a situation right now where I'm suffering because I was not in control. I was allowing my body to be in control at that moment. But I bring that into subjection. So here are some specific things that Paul mentions. And so as we look at what our ultimate goal, obviously, is heaven. That's our ultimate overarching goal, is heaven. And there's good things that we need to do along the way. Obviously, it's not wrong to have goals, to have a family, to move, to have a retirement. The things that we mentioned aren't wrong to have, but this is our ultimate goal, and all of those things along that line need to be in line with this one. And so based on some of the passages that we've read tonight, what is the system or process to get there? What are some things that Paul and Peter gave us as far as information, or if you have other passages that give us for creating a system? We're not trying to build it tonight, but at least some steps in that system to get towards heaven. What are some things that were mentioned? What's that? To run away from sin. All right. Running away from sin is going to very much help us in staying on that path that we've talked about as the imagery of life is given to us, a path to heaven. What else? So fleeing sin, pursuing righteousness, so we have those two opposites. And we talked about those six specific things that were mentioned in that verse. As far as those things that we pursue after, we add to our lives. What are some things that we can do? I'm sorry? To know the Scriptures, to be able to handle aright the Word of God, right? Those are things that are going to help us. Thy Word have I hid in my heart, that I might not sin against thee. That concept has been around for a long time, but it is one that we need to continue to use and rely on. What else? I'm sorry? Clear-minded, yes, to being sober-minded about a lot of things. There's a lot of things that can keep our minds clouded. Even false information can cloud our minds, right? And sometimes people are not necessarily in the pursuit of truth. They just want the assurance that what they think is true, right? And in that case, we're not sober-minded about the nature of truth, or even the truth that we perceive to be true. What else? Yes? No. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. Exactly. That's that enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So as you were saying, we're not walking away from this, right? We're going to the scene of the crash as far as this is concerned. We're not walking away from this life. We will all. But the question is, what is our exit strategy for this life? What have we put in place in order? So, understanding that we will die at some point, and that is part of our overall picture of things, helps, again, putting things into perspective in building our goal and putting those processes in there. When we think about processes, it is much easier. So heaven is my goal, but I don't get there in a day. There's things that I need to do that are micro decisions. If I can break not even a year, not even a month, not even a week, but if I can break my day down into a process of micro decisions towards that goal, instead of the huge goal to be holy, be perfect, be complete, go to heaven, do all these things that are mentioned, break that down in your life. I would encourage you guys to, in your own life, break this down. And what is it for me today in this day, in this hour, in this minute? What does it mean to be holy? Yes, sir. Exactly. That builds habits of righteousness, breaking it down into those individual decisions you're making, like you're saying, and making the right choice in that right moment. And then also as your mental, you know, your mental dialogue, I want to be known as a person who makes right decisions. I want to be known as a person who is a righteous person. So in this moment, I will make this right choice. And you've just positive reinforcement that you are a person who makes right decisions and is a righteous person or a godly person. And so every time you make that decision to be that person, you reaffirm that you are that person that's going to do these things. And you've broken the overall Mount Everest, as you said, down into actionable atomic steps, right? There's the minute steps of getting to that very much thing. Yes. Yes, running the race to win, and that there's motivation there. That's all, and guys, we all get demotivated, right? Have you seen the motivational? These used to be popular back in the office, but the motivational posters, the eagle flying, and all those little motivational. But they all. Did you know there's a demotivational things? Like one of them, demotivational phrases is "It's always brightest" or "It's always darkest right before it goes pitch black," right? Or you know, those demotivation things. So there are moments when we might ourselves get demotivated, right? Even Paul prays that they would be encouraged to say the things and speak the way that he needs to. But that's where us doing this together is another part of this process. Is the more people I can include in my strategy for heaven. And again, it needs to be according to what God. I don't get to pick what it means to be. This is with the construct that we are already members of the Lord's body and we're already striving to be obedient to His word in every aspect of our life. That's assuming that is the case. We can add people together and make them part of us getting towards heaven, right? And we're not doing, this is not a Lone Ranger concept as far as getting towards heaven. Any other thoughts or comments? I'm going to close with this one. Jesus at an early age said this. Some of the very first letters in red we have in Luke's gospel is, "I must be about my Father's business." Some of the last that he said on the cross was, "It is finished." Here are bookends for a life that from the very beginning said, "I'm about my Father's business." And he made the decisions along that path to reach that end that his Father had set out before him. And when he was about to die, he says, "It's finished." Wouldn't that be great if I live my life and my last breath is, "It's finished. I did what I was supposed to do. I fought the good fight. I finished the faith." Right? So that's the concept. And then Hebrews 12, 1 and 2, using Christ, he had a goal before him, the joy that was before him to go and be at the Father's side. It should be as well our joy to finish the goal as well. Thank you very much for your time tonight. Hopefully it's been helpful to you.